Well, Claire's going to come and read God's word. Thanks.
They were on their way up to Jerusalem, with Jesus leading the way, and the disciples were astonished, while those who followed were afraid. Again, he took the 12 aside and told them what was going to happen to him. "We are going up to Jerusalem," he said, "and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the teachers of the law. They will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles, who will mock him and spit on him, flog him and kill him. 3 days later, he will rise." Then James and John, sons of Zebedee, came to him. "Teacher," they said, "we want you to do for us whatever we ask." "What do you want me to do for you?" he asked. They replied, "Let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory." "You don't know what you are asking," Jesus said. "Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with?" "We can," they answered. Jesus said to them, "You will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with, but to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared." When the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many."
Thank you. We're going to spend a few moments now trying to understand what is going on in that that Bible passage. I mean, child dedications, they're always a joy to be at as we celebrate a tiny life. And you can look at a tiny baby and wonder what's in store for them? What ambitions will they have? What's before them? I think it's fair to say that Samuel already does have some ambitions. He knows his mind on certain things. He's able to communicate what he wants. So when that toy is snatched away by Bea or Rosie, totally hypothetical situation, I realize, but he can show that he's cross. Or if he's hungry or he's changing, he'll cry. Or if he's accidentally sat on by Bea or Rosie or Andy, he's going to let them know. And it won't be long before Samuel exercises pester power, that ambitious, persistent asking for the latest toy or gadget. I wonder if you noticed in the Bible story, Bible reading here, this account from 2,000 years ago, that Jesus doesn't quite experience pester power, but it is a huge ask that he gets from people with big ambitions. And it came from two of his disciples, James and John, sons of a man called Zebedee. And they were quite a pair. They were nicknamed the Sons of Thunder. They were your kind of like superhero Avenger characters on Jesus' team. One day even wanting fire to come down from heaven on Jesus' enemies. They'd seen Jesus perform amazing miracles, and they concluded he was the Christ. He's the Messiah. And on this day, these men with planet-sized egos, they could not contain themselves. If Jesus is God's king, then they want places of power on his team. And the first thing I want us to do this morning is to learn from the sons who grabbed everything. Learn from the sons who grabbed everything. They asked Jesus, the mother of all questions, in Mark chapter 10, verse 35. "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask." What a question that was. I mean, it's like asking Bill Gates for a personally signed blank check. I mean, that would be fun, wouldn't it? But imagine it. I mean, it's extraordinary. As a parent, how do you answer that kind of question? And how I answer that question, jog on. It's unlikely that the next thing that comes is going to be helpful for them, isn't it? When you go to a restaurant and it's the deal is kids go free and it's £10 for adults for all that you want. It never feels good afterwards. And you know, parenting, where it's kind of an open check, it just spoils children. Like all news reporters, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, they record different details of Jesus' life. And Matthew, in his gospel, tells us that that James and John's mum was also in on this big ask. She is the ultimate over-ambitious parent. Research has shown that many parents' ambitions for their kids indicate they're trying to live out their own dreams that were failed through their children. And it leads to a kind of a harsh, kind of over-criticalness, over-ambitiousness. Homer Simpson is not known for his parenting skills. When it comes to his ambitions for his kids, he is a lousy dad. Let me give you a couple of quotes. "Okay, son, just remember to have fun out there today, and if you lose, I'll kill you." Actually, standing on a Saturday morning at the side of football matches, it's not far off that from some parents. Or this one, "Son, if you really want something in life, you have to work for it. Now, quiet, they're about to announce the lottery numbers." But Homer's selfishness, it looks pretty tame in comparison to James and John and their mum when they say, "Give us whatever we ask." And here's what they want from Jesus, this kind of free vending machine. In Mark 10:37, they say, "Let one of us sit at your right hand and the other at your left in your glory." See, they'd seen that Jesus is God's king. And they're effectively campaigning for a prime minister and chancellor. That's what they're doing. And they're sons who grab for everything. And it's not like Jesus' disciples, the rest of them, were any better. When they get to hear what James and John were asking, they're just angry they didn't get in first. And it was turning into an ugly rat race for power and for glory. Jesus was a means to a personal end. And we need to learn from these sons who grabbed for everything. It's really easy, isn't it, to point a self-righteous finger at them. We'd never be quite like that. But actually, we do typically view God as a means to a personal end. He's kind of service provider for my comfort and ease. And we can treat him as though he's this kind of, he's our kind of make it happen guy who makes our personal ambitions and ambitions for our children happen. It shows, I think, sometimes in the way we respond to disappointed ambitions. So there can be a real bitterness when we didn't get that promotion or that job. Or we can be utterly crushed when our children didn't get into the first choice of school. Or angry they didn't make it to the sports team or top sets. Or we can be inwardly resentful in the way that we compare ourselves to others with a bigger house, faster car, with a more body beautiful, greater IQ. And when tragedy strikes, and when in the face of that ultimate ambition crusher, we can struggle to know, how does God fit in the face of death? And we typically blame God. There's something in each of us that does that. For we secretly feel, if he's there, then surely he owes us whatever we ask. And this heartbeat that grabs for everything, it is so damaging. It causes hurt. It breaks relationships. It leaves deep, deep wounds. It tears apart lovers. It breaks families. It shatters communities. It alienates tribes and even countries. And the tragic events that we've seen in Manchester at the start of the week, with a man blowing himself up, killing and maiming children and their parents. It is an extreme example of where our heartbeat to grab for ourselves, irrespective of others, can lead to. There is a deep, deep brokenness and selfishness at the heart of our humanity. And we need rescue. We need rescue from ourselves. And so, as well as learning from the sons who grabbed everything, we also need to receive from the Son who gave everything. Receive from the Son who gave everything. Try and picture the scene. The disciples, they're cross with each other. They're all vying for power to be first. And it's like this kind of ugly rat race is tearing around the track full throttle. And it's like Jesus steps onto the track and stops them mid-flow. And he calls them around for a team talk. And first of all, he says, look, just observe how leadership, how greatness operates in the world. He says this. So Jesus called them together and he said, you know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. I don't know about you, I've been bemused this week, watching on the news the body language of certain NATO leaders as they've met together in Brussels. Just an extraordinary moment when Donald Trump physically pushed aside one of the prime ministers to get center stage. Do you want to see that? It was, well, I should stop. Or Macron walking down that red carpet and he kind of, he's heading for Trump, last minute veers off to the right. Again, it's this kind of playground kind of power struggle kind of stuff going on. These guys have got kind of nuclear arsenals at their fingertips. Scary. And we observe it in the workplace too. So the insecure boss who intimidates their staff. Or the colleague who's progressed by treading on other people. And Jesus says, just observe that. That's how greatness happens. Leadership often happens in the world around. But then he says, look, rethink greatness. Rethink what leadership is about. And he goes on and he says this. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. You see, he just turns that right on top, on its head. If you want to be great, be a servant. You want to be first, a slave of all. Last year, I gatecrashed an NHS leadership training course. And we looked at many different models of leadership on that course. And one that's become popular over recent years is called servant leadership. And it's this whole thing of putting followers first. And there were some really interesting discussions with our course leader about actually how this wasn't such a new idea. And that Jesus taught this back 2,000 years ago. But this is more than a leadership model. Jesus also says, you need my servant leadership. It says this up on the screen. The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. You see, we'll never ever serve freely. We'll never be prepared to be a slave for others. We'll always be a slave to grabbing for ourselves until we receive from the Son who gave everything. Jesus says, I came to give my life as a ransom for many. And the word ransom is an ancient wartime kind of word that was used to pay the price that was demanded to release captive soldiers at war. Or recently, WannaCry ransomware criminals have demanded a ransom price to unlock computers that they've hacked into. Jesus gave his life as the ransom price to free us from our slavery to this heartbeat that grabs for everything for ourselves. Jesus had just spoken to his disciples about a cup of suffering that he would have to drink that the disciples couldn't. He's spoken about a baptism, an immersion in suffering that he would have to go through for them. And he warned them that when he arrived in Jerusalem, he'd be condemned to death, he'd be abused, he'd be tortured, he'd be executed before rising from the dead 3 days later. And it happened. On the cross, Jesus became the ultimate servant, the lowest slave, as he willingly took the just punishment for us, for our heartbeat that grabs for ourselves, and treats him like a free vending machine. Just think of it. It is an extraordinary thing that Jesus becomes the lowest slave when you think of who he is. I don't know if you noticed, rather an odd thing he calls himself, the Son of Man. He was referring to an ancient 6th century BC prophecy from a man called Daniel. And Daniel writes this: "In my vision at night, I looked, and there before me was one like a Son of Man, coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached God, the Ancient of Days, and was led into his presence. He was given authority and glory and sovereign power. All nations and peoples of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed." And Jesus is saying, that's me. And so as Jesus steps onto the stage of world history, he's the supreme Lord of heaven and earth. And he does not need to jostle for center stage for the picture. He is center stage. He is the Son of Man who extraordinarily did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. And this is where it's personal for us. The fact that he gives his life to ransom us implies that we have to receive personally what he has done for us if we're going to be ransomed, if we're going to be rescued from grabbing for ourselves and its ultimate consequence of God's just judgment. So today, will you receive that gift of ransom? Do you see the need for it? Will you receive it? The gift of forgiveness. It comes to us by faith, by trusting in what Jesus has done for us. Trusting that on the cross, he was punished for us. You know, there's something in us, isn't it, that doesn't like to be served. We like to be doers and to have it all together. And even when it comes to each other, we can be rather prickly about being served too much. Well, look, this is the ultimate service. As Jesus dies on the cross, that we might be forgiven. We let him serve you in that ultimate and so needy way. And put your trust in his death for you. And give your life to live under his rightful rule. And do that, and he changes your spiritual heartbeat, so that you long to live for him. It no longer grabs for everything for self, but gives to him and is free to serve others.